The Sunday feature, Forests of the Imagination, was presented by Eleanor Rosamond Barraclough and produced in Bristol by Melvin Rickaby. And a reminder that all of our Sunday features are available as podcasts via BBC iPlayer Radio.
As the days shorten and the shadows lengthen, Afternoon Concert explores the forest of composers' imaginations. Woodland spirits and mythical creatures are evoked. Folk tales brought to life. This week, venture into the forest with Afternoon Concert. Weekday afternoons from 2 o'clock on BBC Radio 3.
It's 7:30 now and time for Drama on 3. Tonight we have three brand new plays recorded at Radio 3's first ever pop-up drama studio, created in August at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. An audience joined actors, producers and technical teams inside a temporary drama studio that was built as a new venture at Summerhall Arts Venue. So this evening we're going to hear Death of a Matriarch by Tanika Gupta, Three Letters by the poet Nell Lyshon, but we begin with 1963 by Peter Flannery, in which he looks back at the pivotal year of his childhood when everything changed. And the plays do contain some strong language.
"1963" by Peter Flannery.
It was the year my world froze. The worst winter anybody could remember. In my street, the snow started falling on Boxing Day 1962. And it would still be here in April 1963. But none of us knew that yet. You could still get to school, just. And home again, just. I lived in a distant cul-de-sac on an overflow estate out of town. The council had named the estate Primrose. Irony being one of the things never in short supply at that time in that place, unlike food, or paraffin, or books. Coming round the bend towards our tin house in the corner of the cul-de-sac, or dead end, as it was more commonly known, I heard the igloo before I saw it. Not even the milk float had made it down the street for weeks, so what did it matter that while I'd sat shivering in school all day, somebody had built an igloo in the middle of the road. There was only one person in the dead end that played the harmonica, Bernard, who grew up in the house next door to me, but now worked in a hospital far, far away in Middlesbrough.
"Bernard, that you in this igloo?
Can you see our house, kidder?"
"Just. Snow's coming down like interference."
"You've been reading books again?"
"Aye. Poems."
"There's me ma in the window with a telephone in her hand."
"Aye. What you doing?"
"Cup of tea if you want one. Got a flask."
"How come it's not cold in an igloo?"
"I'm a nurse, not a teacher, man."
"I've been meaning to ask you about that. How could a man be a nurse?" "Are you the only one?"
"No, there's another one."
"What's he called?"
"Peter."
"Same as me?"
"Aye. He's brainy like you as well. He was a doctor where he come from."
"Where's that?"
"St. Kitts, they call it."
"Well, that's an island in the Caribbean."
"See? Brainy."
"Why is he living here when he could be warm?"
"They chased him out."
"For like?"
"Bernard! Are you going to answer this bloody phone or not? I'm sick of it ringing. They want to know when you're coming back to work. Bernard!"
"When the snow melts, tell them I'm trapped."
"Oh, stop snowing, Bert. It's freezing. Me ma filled your flask with soup."
"Oh, it's lush. Tell her I said thanks very much."
"Why don't you want to go back to the hospital? You not like it?"
"I love it, son."
"What do you do?"
"I give people their medicine, make their beds, take patients to the toilet."
"Same as a woman?"
"Same as a woman.
But you like her, though.
How's school these days? Still top of the class?
Aye.
What are you going to do when you grow up? Don't stay around here, kidder.
I would like to be an author.
Aye. How do you get a start in that?
By practising.
How do you know what to write, though?
It's in the air all around you, man. Say, I'm on a bus or in the queue at the fish shop. I listen to people talking and I memorise it. And when I get home, I write it down. Well, if there's any paper, like.
No paper to write on?
Sometimes. So I just remember it till I get some.
I don't want to put you off, son, but that's not really being an author, is it? It's more like being a shorthand typist.
No, because what I do then is change it. So it's better than it was when they said it in the pork shop queue.
You rewrite life. That's more like it. That's proper authorship. When I was your age, I wanted to be a painter. Can you good suit this? Mulligatawny, is it?
Heinz's. Bernard?
What?
What'll happen to us if I fail me 11 plus?
No, because you're not going to fail it, are you?
Well, what if I do, though?
Do you worry about that?
When I'm in bed at night, I write a list in my head about all the things that are worrying us. Then I imagine what it'd be like when I'm really old, like 40 or something, and I'm dying. And on my deathbed, I ask myself questions. Having freckles, did that ruin your life? No. Being fat, did that ruin your life? No. Feeling you're 11 plus, did that ruin your life? Yes.
Well, if you put it that way.
See?
Two things, son. First off, the whole point of the 11 plus is to pick out lads like you. That's what it's for. It's a pity for the rest who are right enough, but that's another matter. Look, it's designed to pick you out, so it will. Because if it didn't pick you out, it would be them failing. And they can't fail, because they make up the rules.
If they failed, they'd have to send themselves to secondary modern. Imagine the rulers of the world all sitting in St. Bede's with no pencils or jotters and no books, because all the money's gone to the grammar school.
Remember that later on, son. At night, when the doubts crowd in, remember it.
What's that hooting?
Second thing, listen. You will be an author. I know you will. You listening?
It's a car. Mind the igloo! Bernard, it's a car, man. The snow's coming down again. The wind's dropped. The snow's falling in slow motion. Come and look, man. Bernard!
Hello, son. I'm looking for my friend, Bernard. Can you tell me where he lives?
Peter!
Bernard. Bernard. I came to say sorry.
I'd never seen two men embrace like that except at funerals. And once when I was very little, when Newcastle won the cup. I close my eyes. 1963 was turning into a year of surprises. The season changed, the snow melted, only to be replaced by something else. Something that gripped the country in a different way. Snow, I could understand. You could see it, you could touch it. But this new thing was hard to grasp somehow. And as it slowly revealed itself, I began to worry, to my horror and shame, that it might somehow all be my fault, that I might somehow have brought it into the world. My grandmother had gone blind, so every Sunday morning when I finished my paper round, I went up to her house with her copy of the News of the World, which she couldn't read. But I could.
You get sick of some of these. Read some more out about the goings-on in London.
I well remember a dinner party for about 20 friends.
20 friends? Who does a think that, kitten? If you had 20 friends in Jarry, you must have won the pools. Carry on.
There was just one snag. Our butler fell sick.
Well, what?
Butler.
Oh, aye, they would have a butler, the high-ups. Go on, but miss out the boring bits, pet lamb. Just read the good bits.
Gran, I'm gonna miss confession.
You've got all day for confession.
Right. Boring bit, boring bit. Blah, blah, blah. But a friend offered to do the job. A man of substance and high birth.
Oh, this'll be Mr. Perfume, or you watch.
I thought he would dress himself up as a footman, but...
Oh, hang on a minute. I like this one. Help me to mortify my flesh just for today. Right, so concentrate, Hannah. Something about a footballer, was it?
Footman. But he had other ideas. He wore nothing but a pair of very short striped pants.
Never.
And a black hangman's mask.
Never in the bloody world.
By the time the fish course was over, his private parts were granny man. I've got to go to confession.
His private parts were what?
See you next Sunday, Gran.
Don't leave us in suspense about Mr. Profumo's private man. What's the matter with this lad these days? Listen, keep away from that girl's blouse, Bernard. He's a bad influence on your morals.
Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been a week since my last confession.
Tell me what's troubling you, my son.
Father, I keep looking at this picture.
Ah, is it the sort of picture I'm imagining?
Well, what sort of picture are you imagining, Father?
Don't get clever with me, Peter.
Oh, man, Father! I thought the confession box was anonymous.
You seriously think I sit here day after day and don't know who I'm listening to? Now get on with this picture.
Who's in it? A woman, Father.
Uh-huh. And what's this woman doing? Well,
she's just sitting on a chair, looking at us.
Is she naked?
I think so. See, the chair's the wrong way around, so you can't really...
Oh, it's that picture. The famous Christine Keeler. As she wheedled her way into your thoughts.
Well...
Sleeping or waking, there she is in your imaginings.
Well...
Is that the way it is?
Well...
And what are you doing while she's looking at you with her brazen gaze? Where are your hands? Well,
joined together, Father.
Oh, not now, you idiot. When you're gawping at the photo...
Oh.
I see. And at night, this woman walks abroad in your dreams. Try as you may, you cannot shake her image out of your head. Am I right?
Yes, Father.
And where are your hands then? I see. And in the morning, what do you find?
Stuff, Father.
And do you know the name of this stuff, my son? Guilt. What does your mother have to say about this guilt?
She says she wouldn't mind if she could afford a washing machine.
What hope for this country? What hope when its youth spends itself in this way, eh?
I don't know, Father.
That was a rhetorical question.
Sorry, Father, but I still don't know.
And you supposed to be top of the class. The country's gone to the dogs. Standards not even slipping. Going over the edge like a Niagara. I absolve you from your sins in God's name. Go forth in peace, and for your penance, say 12 Our Fathers and 12 Hail Marys.
Can I ask you a question, Father?
Of course, my son. I'm here to offer guidance and forgiveness.
Father, I sometimes wonder, is it my dirty mind that brings all this stuff into the world?
What the devil are you talking about now?
I try to change the world by writing it out different, when there's enough paper. But sometimes what I imagine is even worse. So I'm asking, is the sin of the world sometimes my fault, you think?
Well, that's plain psychotic. Add on another 3 Hail Marys.
Thank you, Father.
You look like an angel.
Walk by like June, an angel. Mr. Profumo had resigned his office. Not for wearing striped pants and a hangman's mask, though my grandmother went to her grave convinced this was true, not even for having a quickie or two with Christine Keeler, but for lying to the House of Commons about it. He paid for his sins with a lifetime of unpaid public service. Meanwhile, Christine paid for her one and only sin, being desired by lots of men like me and Father Magna and Mr. Profumo, with a lifetime of alcohol-induced decline until, having eventually lost the beauty that so ensnared all us innocents, she could be safely derided as an old tart that had ruined a lot of decent men. So perhaps Father Magna's rhetorical question was finding its answer. Little hope indeed for the country. Meanwhile, I had rhetorical questions coming out of my ears. If X equals Y and 2X squared equals 17 shillings and sixpence, then how many apples in 100 yards? Answer? 11 plus. The big day had arrived, and it brought with it the much-anticipated disaster.
A field, field, field!
Put the knives and forks out for us, will you, Pet? Your dad'll be in from work in a minute. I got behind talking to Mrs. Jones about Bernard.
Are you listening, Mother?
Never mind, I'll do it myself.
Mother, man!
Yes, Pet.
Me life's finished.
How's that, Flower? Wash your hands, Pet.
Because I've failed me 11 plus.
Was that today? I've got a mind like a sieve these days.
Yes, it was today. I've been to heaven to the grammar school to sit the papers. What irony is that, eh? You sit in the exact same school, taking the 11 plus. That failing the 11 plus means you'll never get to go to.
I'm not quite sure what you're trying to...
I have failed my 11 plus.
Well, can we just wait for the results to come out?
Oh, yes. Head in the sand. Meanwhile, me whole life's blighted. Blighted!
Dear me. I wish he'd stop reading books. Mind, if he is going to St. Bede's, he'll never see a book again.
Tick-tock went the clock of 1963 as I waited for official confirmation of the life blight. Bernard was home again. It was characteristic of Bernard that he always needed somewhere to hide. The igloo having long since gone down the drain, he seemed to have taken up summer residence in his mum's coal shed.
Bernard? Bernard? I know you're in there.
How?
The harmonica.
It was a rhetorical question.
Can I come in?
What for?
Is that one as well?
No, it requires an answer. What is it you're looking for?
The big freeze, rhetorical questions, the 11 plus, sex in high places, and now, existentialism. It was a big year, and it wasn't over yet. Because as we'd slept, somewhere in Buckinghamshire, somebody was robbing the mail train.
Bernard, it says here, £2,600,000 in the Shields Gazette. Where have you gone? Bernard.
I'm behind this bush.
Bernard, why do you like hiding so much?
I don't have to answer questions.
Looking back, it's clear somebody should have been helping Bernard. Somebody from the hospital, maybe. Not a young lad obsessed with nocturnal emissions and the 11 plus.
Bernard, can you hear us? Or is that another rhetorical question?
It's a stupid one. Read out about the train robbery.
Thieves have ambushed the Glasgow to Euston mail train and stolen over 2 million in used, untraceable banknotes in the biggest ever raid on a British train.
Was it a namer?
It doesn't say. Or the post office train, known as the Up Special.
That's not really the name of the train, though.
Nah.
Like Mallard or Dominion of Canada?
Nah. Had run every night for 125 years until it was brought to a halt by a red light at 03:15 GMT in Buckinghamshire. I wonder where that is. Early this morning.
Red light? So that's how they stopped it. Inside job.
This was obviously a brilliantly planned operation, said Detective Superintendent Buckinghamshire.
He's got the same name as where the train was stopped.
Hiya, Bernard. You out, are we? I think that's a misprint.
Brilliantly planned. Coppers these days, they seem to admire criminals. What about innocent people minding their own business, not doing anybody any harm? Do the police admire them? No, they don't. Can't wait to get their hands on them.
Who are you talking about here, Bernard?
What day is it, Bonnie lad?
Thursday, all day.
There'll be a namer tonight, going down to Shields. I used to say it every Thursday night when I was your age. I saw 4000 North Star one night. Gone to the knacker's yard now. Every Thursday night, a gang of lads, maybe a dozen away, with torches, right up onto that line. Can you still do that, kidda?
Aye.
What, they still haven't fenced it off properly?
I don't think so.
So you're right by the line?
Driver Gann's mad if he sees the torches.
Aye, well, he'd probably get the blame, wouldn't he?
Maybe some of your mates will go to see it.
Nah, I don't see me old mate anymore.
Bernard, where's Peter now? You don't mention him anymore.
He got chased out the country, back where he come from.
What for?
He got in a fight. Some fellas took against him. He fought back. The law took their part, not his.
Why'd they do that?
You know that photo you talked about, the one of Christine Keeler sitting in a chair without on?
Oh, yeah. That one. I only looked at it a couple of times.
You can look at it till the cows come home for all I care, son. Well, I don't know when that is, do you?
It probably depends on the time of year.
Rhetorical question. Point on Megan. You could put that photo of Bridget Bardot or Marilyn Monroe in front of some men, and never mind photos. You could put them in the flesh in front of some men, and it wouldn't have the same effect on them that the photo had on you.
Oh, man, it was only once, and I've had absolution off Father Magna.
I'm trying to explain something here, man, about some men. Not all men fancy women.
Are you saying Peter's one of them?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Is that what he came to say he was sorry about?
Well, in a way, yes, I suppose he was. Read out some more, sonna.
And is that why the men hit him?
Read the paper out, man, son.
Oh, right. Is that why you don't want to see him anymore? Because he's a homo.
Just read the bloody paper, will you?
The Postmaster General, Mr. Bevins, has called for a full and urgent inquiry into the security of Royal Mail Train. Are you all right, Bernard?
It's a funny old world, son. The earth turns, but nothing changes. We're frozen in time. It's getting dark. When's the namer?
About 20 minutes. We'll need torches.
We'll manage without torches. Away, run your bugger. Race you.
Wait, not fair, I wasn't ready. I won, yes. Roger Bannister wins the mile. Bernard.
I'm right behind you.
Oh, hey. Oh, pitch black, isn't it?
Where's the line?
Hey, give us your hand.
Oh, that close. We better step back a bit.
We will when the namer comes.
What time is it?
I cannot even see me watch.
Hold your wrist up. Nearer. Keep still, man. We'll both look closer.
Bernard, man, what was that for?
Here she comes.
What'd you do that for, man?
Stand back a bit. Look for the name. On the number. Here she comes. Ready?
I saw 88. I think it's Dartmouth Castle. Do you see it? You see the name? Bernard. 4088. Bernard. Bernard.
I never saw Bernard again. A week later, I wrote him a letter to the hospital where he worked. I wanted to let him know I'd passed me 11 plus. My year had unfrozen. I said I hoped his would as well, and that he'd be happy again, and maybe see him in the Christmas holidays. Maybe we could build another igloo. And maybe his friend Peter would come back and see him. I never got a reply. But 1963 wasn't finished with either of us yet.
The latest information, and things are rather confused at this moment. Shots definitely were fired at the presidential motorcade. The entire area has been blocked off. We'll bring you full details as soon as they are available.
Can you remember where you were when Kennedy was shot? I was in the Isoldo watching Jason and the Argonauts. Fabulous animation, but the dialogue was plodding, I opined loftily in my diary. So I didn't hear about Kennedy at first. Sitting on the bus home, I decided to take the opportunity to hone my writing skills by earwigging the tipsy couple in the seat in front.
First day I ever saw him on the telly with no top coat on doing his... What's it?
What's it?
The thing they do, man, when they get swearing.
The swearing in, you mean?
Aye, the swearing in. I am a Berliner. He got a life for this time.
This is very confusing. What did she say to Margaret? And who had no coat on? I can't turn this rubbish into look back in anger if she won't be clear about what she said to Margaret.
I says to Margaret, you can spot a mile off what's going to happen here, standing there with no coat on in the freezing cold. And where's all the Secret Service men? Sitting in the warm somewhere?
I think this is shaping up for a comedy scene.
It's a tragedy.
Oh.
Anyway, that's what I says to Margaret. The minute it come on the telly the night, I nearly didn't come out. I'm telling you, I nearly stopped in out of respect.
Respect for what? Pity Margaret isn't here to add clarity.
Margaret just went on her knees and prayed for his soul because she shares the faith, whereas I don't, you see, because me dad was Plymouth Brethren.
Is she talking about the Pope? Not the Pope, surely. He's not long been the job.
And his wife. Eh, a heart breaks for his wife.
Right, definitely not the Pope, then. But who?
Did it have to be him, Margaret says.
By now, I must have been the only person on the planet who hadn't heard the news.
From Dallas, Texas, this flash, apparently official. President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
But I was still on the bus home, still blithely unaware of the saddest event of a bewilderingly eventful year.
If this woman could tell me where it happened, then I might be able to guess who it was.
Happened in a cupboard, I heard.
Sort of cupboard?
One where you keep things. How many kinds of cupboards are there?
What was this leading Catholic doing in a cupboard? Oh, two stops to go and I still don't know who Margaret was saying her prayers for.
Who told you all this?
It was all over the pork shop, man. Nobody was talking about anything else at tea time. Of course there will be now. Nobody will ever remember the poor lad, will they? Dying on the same day Kennedy gets assassinated.
Kennedy? Did she say Kennedy got assassinated?
Eh, I can't believe them words is coming out me mouth. That lovely looking man, President of the United States.
Leader of the free world. Smashing looking wife and her. I wonder will she remarry?
Far too early for that, man. Show a bit of respect, will you? No one will remember that lad.
I still don't know who you're talking about.
You do, man. Was that our stop?
Next one. I would have known.
Well, there wasn't out to set him apart to look at, but he stood out. Everybody knew. You did know him, man. He was, you know, a bit light on his feet. Not as other men are. He was a male nurse, man.
Ah, him?
Bernard?
Bernard, his name was. Lived down the dead end.
Bernard? Dead?
So what's this about a cupboard?
He was hiding in it. He had the key. Next stop, please.
Finish the story.
What, pet?
Finish the story about the man in the cupboard. Could you, please?
It was just a lad from round here, son. He was a nurse. Locked his cell in a cupboard at work and took his pills. We were just saying, nobody will remember him on a day like this.
I'm sometimes asked why I write so often about the past. And I have a glib answer at the ready. I can't change the present. I can't change the future. But I can change the past. But sometimes you can't change the world just by rewriting it in your head. Some things just won't be rewritten. You just have to live with them. The question, why did Bernard kill himself, became the opposite of those rhetorical questions we asked each other on the night of the train. It cried out for an answer. It was years before I could see what the answer was. The night of the train. The night of the stolen kiss. The night he told me Peter had been sent back home. Had he first meant to take his life that night, under the wheels of 4088 Dartmouth Castle? Like much of the past, it doesn't matter now. So ended 1963, the year of my 11 plus, the year that changed my life, that sent me to a school that had books, the year that gave me stories to read, stories to tell, and lives to try and understand.
In 1963, the narrator was played by Andy Clark and the boy was Curtis Appleby. Bernard was played by Ross Wayton and mother and grandmother by Jill Dello. Michael Ajawo was Peter. 1963 was written by Peter Flannery and directed by Melanie Harris. It was a Spark Lab production for BBC Radio 3.
Listening to Drama on 3 on BBC Radio 3, with a series of new plays recorded in front of an audience at Summerhall Arts Centre as part of the Edinburgh Festival Fringe.
Death of a Matriarch by Tanika Gupta.
Uncle Amit.
How is she?
Not good.
What do the doctors say?
Well, they're going to keep her comfortable, put her in her own room though. The nurses seem... She was just in so much pain. She was screaming in agony every time I tried to move her. Her legs, her arms, everything. I didn't know...
You did the right thing. Thank God you were at home.
It's like she suddenly crashed. I think the cancer's spread everywhere now.
I'll be there as soon as I can.
Sapphire blue, my favourite colour. Sunlight dancing, sparkling on the crests of the waves. Feel light walking on air, legs don't hurt. Can feel the pull of the swell in my body. Tugging, inviting, the foam tickling my feet, tempting me in. Soft, airy foam, pure white, like bubbles in the bath I used to run for my babies. Oh, my baby's arm, so fat and dimpled, such soft skin. Oh, water is warm. Where is everyone? Where am I? My